Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Neutral Game, your friendly fighting game podcast. I am Six Detmar of Scanline Media.
And I'm Mildur Kovacevic of Real Soviet Bear Enterprises.
And we're here to talk about a new fighting game. We have been longtime fans of the BlazBlue series of games, even when the rest of the fighting game world turned its cold back on us. And now BlazBlue is back with a new game, a crossover game called BlazBlue Crosstag Battle, which is very different from every previous BlazBlue game. And it's been really interesting to get into.
It's been quite a trip, especially because, like, when they announced it, the whole reveal trailer was Ragna and Jin appearing, and I'm like, oh, okay, what is this? Some kind of, like, BlazBlue minigame? And then they drop in the Undernight and the Persona 4 characters, and I'm like, oh, okay, this is a surprise, but it makes sense, I guess, because they publish those games and have access to those sprites and things like that. And then just, like, in comes freaking Ruby of all franchises. Like, I would have never, ever guessed that in a million years. That would have been my last guess for an Arc System crossover fighting game thing.
Yeah, it was a really left-field pick, and apparently, I mean, there were a lot of factors with that pick. One is that the creators of Ruby, the original creator of Ruby, who has since passed away, was a huge BlazBlue fan. Developers of Guilty Gear always said that Ruby character designs seem interesting to make a fighting game for, and then also they were looking for more Western appeal than their fighting games usually have.
Yeah, that's quite a lot. That's actually, like, very smartly played, because you think when you go for Western appeal, you go for mainstream stuff, but actually, no, you want to go for the, like, very core, like, niche stuff that has a very dedicated fan base to get, like, the actual interest in.
Mm-hmm. For sure, because, I mean, it's a you would say, an underserved audience, just because, like, there's not a lot of Ruby content out there besides the show. There's one video game on PC that's not great, and so, like, a community that's really starving for some content.
I can't wait to see the BlazBlue Crosstag Battle 2 game that has Undertale characters.
That would be, I would play that. I would probably have some thoughts.
Anyway, speaking of fan fiction and fan wishes, how about we're gonna touch something I never thought I'd touch upon in a BlazBlue game.
Oh god, we're gonna do, okay, which is your favorite pairing? Who do you ship? I'm so glad we're going here, Mio. Thank you.
So, I feel like I feel like Chia should go with Hyde. I think they would work well together, given enough time. Even though it's not an officially recognized custom intro. I feel like likely she would help Hyde, like, you know, be more open and, you know, less upset about everything. But what I was actually referring to was the story mode.
My mistake. Please, go ahead. Let's talk about the story mode.
Okay, so I usually don't touch BlazBlue story mode with, like, a 10-foot pole. I cannot, like, after Calamity Trigger. Calamity Trigger was okay, but then, like, while going through Continuum Shift, there's this concept, like, a thread that you follow, and I feel like the thread just unraveled and became this big lump that just filled up the room, and I didn't even know where I was anymore.
Oh, you were following the thread, and then you realized you were actually following the part of the thread that was a Chrono Phantasma, and you needed to follow the central fiction back to the core ideals of this world. You see, you were caught up in the time loop and were deceived by a paradox.
Thankfully, this game just does a very straightforward thing of, hey, you're in this weird... Okay, we're going to go with minimal spoilers, by the way. So you're in this, like, custom world, and there's this overseer-like voice, and the overseer-like voice says, hey, each of these worlds has their own gem they have to protect, and then, like, each story from each franchise has their own gem, and it's like, hey, everybody's gonna try and steal your gem, and you have to steal other people's gems, and whoever gets the gem to the end wins, and they get to go back to their world, and that's that.
The opening, like, three lines of this game. It opens in the story mode with a robot voice with no avatar, basically, I'm going to paraphrase, but basically saying, merging dimensions. Done.
Dumb.
And that's just how the game opens. It's so, they don't give a shit. It's just like, let's get to the fanfic as fast as possible.
And I think that's great for this because, you know, like when you have like a crossover franchise like this, I don't particularly like when, you know, you have this like merged villain like you have in like Marvel versus Capcom games, like where it's like, okay, the main villain is the big bad from both of these franchises merge into one, and then we're going to justify mm-hmm. how each of these like worlds interact. I think it's much more interesting when you see like how these characters would react if they were in the same like vicinity, if they had to interact with each other, like how most fanfiction works. And they focused mm-hmm. on that. I think that was an extremely smart decision, and I usually don't do like dubbed voice acting, but I kind of felt that it would be more authentic if I listened to the English voice acting in this game. And the voice actors did like a really good job, and just, you know, there's just like these lines of, you know, characters pairing up with their arch nemesis, or just like pairing up with their equivalent from another game. Like when you see how, like, for example, Chie interacts with Makoto because they're both, you know, gals that like to punch really, really hard. It's just so sweet to watch all that.
Mm-hmm. And also the story setup allows, like, I mean, a part of the context of the story is like this, you know, omnipotent, like, AI thing going like, nope, you're not allowed to fight unless you're teamed up. You can't fight unless it's 2v2. I won't allow it. And so you get situations where like someone literally shows up to kill someone else, and then the robot's like, nope, you can't. You have to work together. And it's just ridiculous and very, very fun to see those interactions.
It's very silly because the entire plot is just one big excuse, but it's like the interactions between the characters are all very in character. Like they sacrifice the plot so they would let the characters be themselves.
Mm-hmm.
It's also really fun to see how like some characters like who wouldn't fight against each other end up fighting against each other by accident, or, you know, due to a misunderstanding. Or it's also, for me, like, interesting because there are multiple franchise story modes. Like, when you're playing, like, let's say when you're playing the Uniel story mode and you run up against Gardeau, how he acts with the characters from his universe is completely different to how he acts, for example, with Ragna. Like, if you played Blaze Blue story mode first, you'd think, like, Gardeau is, like, a pretty upstanding and decent guy.
Mm-hmm. And I also appreciate how the different story modes try to respect the tone of their original franchise. Like, the Blaze Blue story mode is all about, like, okay, you have different options, like, there are different, like, dialogue choices and paths, and you're trying to find, like, you're trying to unravel this, like, conspiracy, basically. And then, like, the Persona one, it's like, well, you're the investigation team, so you're just trying to get to the bottom of the mystery as to why this place exists. And the Ruby one is very Ruby, where it's just like, they don't really care why they're there. They're just like, I guess we gotta fight and make friends.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate that respect for the tone.
Yeah, whoever did the writing on this did their research for each respective franchise. Like, I don't have much experience with Undernight's tone, but I do know, like, I haven't played Persona, but I know how Persona works, and I know how, like, I looked up a bit how Ruby works, and I know how Blaze Blue works, so it all felt, like, fairly genuine and actually well-crafted. Like, I was really surprised at the story mode for, like, this weird anime crossover game was fun.
I was surprised when they announced it had a story mode. I was assuming it wouldn't, and then it turned out to be, like, yeah, a really fun, enjoyable story mode.
Yeah.
So I was definitely pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, and someone who's, like, out of all of these franchises is only really into Blaze Blue, and even, like, I don't like Blaze Blue story, it was still really fun to just watch it. Like, it's like this weird one-off anime filler episode.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like we do have to give a special shout-out to the writing and voice acting for Ragna the Blood Edge, because this story mode is just being him being fed up with everyone forever.
Oh my god, like, I have newfound respect for, like, that voice actor. Like, I always thought he was relatively okay, But I like the Japanese one more because of some other anime roles he had. But holy crap, did he carry the Blaze Blue story? Like those deliveries were really on point.
Yeah. So it's really fun in that respect, and a lot of that actually carries over to the multiplayer. There are a lot of, you know, like, unique voice intros for different pairings. Not as many as you'd like, because once they get your mind going, you can, your brain is like, oh, these two obviously should have a pairing, and like, there's only so many they can do. But they did quite a few, and they're fun. They add good flavor.
I am, like, I'm a sucker for that. Like, custom intros ever since, Guilty Gear X, because they had like a very like two or three custom intros. Ever since then, I'm just a sucker for that. Like, as soon as there's a custom theme song, custom intro just gives context to the fight, and I get all hyped up. And I may or may not have made my final decision for the team based on whether the pairings I had had a custom intro or not. Like, I was very close to doing Hakumen and Naoto, but I saw they didn't have a custom intro, so I ended up going with Hakumen and Vice.
Yeah, I though the one bummer I have is that I've so far, like, I mean, they're going to keep rolling out DLC characters, but so far with what they've rolled out, the one, like, ride-or-die character I have is Yang from Ruby. I really, really love how she plays, and we'll talk about it later, but I don't like any of her pairings, and it's a bummer.
Yeah, they'll probably, like, add it with time. Like, they have a precedent of adding new custom intros and franchises.
Mm-hmm. And also, more like, they've already, like, when Yang came out, it was revealed that she had a bunch with characters from the base game already. So I'm sure when they release more DLC characters, it'll be like, oh, and she's got one with Nine the Phantom or whatever.
Yeah. So. But anyway, I think that's enough of like the flavor and the aesthetics and this narrative. Let's dive into the meat of things.
So. It's interesting because this game is a Blaze Blue game in terms of, like, most of the characters, like, the majority of the cast is from Blaze Blue, and a lot of the flavor around the UI and the style of game is generally Blaze Blue, but mechanically, it is not... it doesn't feel very Blaze Blue at all to me. It feels like a new Arxis game.
It does feel... It very much feels like what I expected it would feel like. It feels like these weird one-off licensed Arc System games, like how they have Sengoku Buster Across or Hokuto no Ken and stuff like that. Like, when you play it, you can see the influences from other Arc System games, but it's definitely its own thing, but it's not entirely its own thing. It has a lot of takeaways from previous franchises, which is normal. So it has a lot of, like... clever takeaways from Blaze Blue, but comparing it back to back, yeah, you know, it's a similar, like, to Blaze Blue as, I don't know, like, Street Fighter Alpha to Street Fighter, like, 5, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. I feel like it almost feels more like Persona 4 Arena, but even then, it still has a very different feel. I don't know, I haven't played anything that feels like this game before, because I think, well, partially because I didn't play Marvel Infinite, right, which is the other sort of, like, tornado tag style fighting game from recent years. But yeah, it's this interesting, they use the tag mechanics in this game to sort of, I feel like they thread the needle between, like, a one-on-one fighter and, like, a Marvel 2 or 3 or Dragon Ball Fighter style, like, big chaotic fight to try and make a fight where it is mostly one-on-one, but you use tags to keep momentum going?
I think one of the biggest factors I've noticed from playing and seeing how other people have played is, like, each character seems to have, like, a certain amount of how much they can synergize at all with other characters. Like, some characters definitely feel more independent than others. Like Hakumen doesn't feel like he is that good as an assist or to have assists, whereas, like, Rachel, with how she sets up pulls and can, like, tag in to activate them and things like that, she feels very much more tag in and tag out friendly. But I think the core mechanics encourage you to still use attack mechanics, because for example, if you don't use meter to burst, aka using meter to interrupt your opponent's combo and have your other character tag in as an interrupt, if you don't use that, you're gonna die ridiculously quickly. Like, that is the main life extender I've seen.
Yeah, the damage in this game is really high.
Yeah, and because it's very easy to gain meter for that burst, and because your character, when they're tagged out, they regain health, like, before I started regularly doing that burst and tagging characters out, I would die in, like, 30 seconds or less. When I started doing that, the matches, you know, tripled in length.
Mm-hmm. Even so, however, the timer, I've never seen the timer run out.
No.
The timer seems like it's there just, like as a preventative measure in case some game, like, someone comes up with a strategy that is a timer scam, the timer exists, but I have never seen it be even remotely an issue.
Yeah, I have had more issues with the timer in Dragon Ball FighterZ than this one.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the one in Dragon Ball FighterZ is, like, twice the length. I think it's, like, 300 in Dragon Ball FighterZ and 180 or 70 in Blaze Blue Tag.
Mm-hmm. So generally, your options with tag mechanics in this game is you can call in an assist, which is like a Marvel vs. Capcom style. However, you have three different assists, and generally there's sort of one that's like one for neutral, one for offensive, one for defensive. They get mixed up a bit, but generally that's how they tend to be laid out. You can obviously tag in and tag out. You can do supers to tag, like a delayed hyper combo from Marvel vs. Capcom, where you do a super and then switch into the next character's super. And then you can do the burst. And yeah, so because of this, that means your characters are changing out constantly, you're constantly getting chances to heal, and you're able to fill the holes in your offense or defense with your assists.
Yeah, it works fairly standard. I'd say the only, like, truly unique things are, like, the combo breaker, right, the burst. And I guess the way that auto-tag-in works is a bit different than what I'm used to, because I'm used to, like, auto-tag-in from Marvel or Dragon Ball FighterZ being, like, either you jump in and you can basically eat a setup from the opponent, or it just resets back to neutral for both players. In this one, your character jumps in attacking, and it is extremely difficult from what I've seen to actually punish that attack.
I'm pretty sure it's impossible to punish it. It's really plus on block, and you're invincible. So, like, I've seen situations where you can, like, dodge the incoming.
You can
right?
dodge
That's
it.
Doable.
Yeah.
But you still can't punish them because they're invincible until they gain control.
Yeah, I know you can grab it with parries, I've tested that, but there's nothing really the parry does afterwards, because, again, vulnerability. But I'm not going to say, like, it's impossible to punish, I'm just saying, like, the intent seems like it's impossible, but I don't know if anybody figured anything out.
I've seen some stuff, I've seen some high-level play, and everyone seems to just take the block and then go from there. So I think, I'm going to say for now, I think it's impossible, but yeah, maybe there's going to be some tech that proves me wrong.
Yeah. But one thing I do appreciate about the tag in and out mechanic is the way the cooldown kind of works, because you have your own assist bar, which, like, determines, okay, if you have enough of this special assist bar, you can do an assist, you can do a super assist, you can do a burst or a tag in or a tag out. But one thing they do, and we'll go into more detail with the inputs later, if we do a DP, a Dragon Punch, and each character has one, and you get punished for it, like, you get comboed while in recovery of it, you can't do a burst, and you can't do an assist. Like, you are in this red state, like, glowing red state, which basically says your assist cannot come out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you also get those off of, during supers, during any Resonance Blaze combo, which is a mechanic we'll talk about in a minute, and then also, I think, during throws, but I'm less sure about that one.
Yeah. And one thing I really, really appreciate about the tagging mechanic in this game is it doesn't have, I don't know what the specific term for it is, but it doesn't let you force the opponent to tag in, like, you know, spending meter to kick out their current character and force the other character in.
Right, no snapbacks.
Yeah, snapbacks, that was the term. Because Rebel Fighters has that, so you can, like, chase down a character that runs away. But in this game, if you let a character tag out, you miss your opportunity. You're not killing them until you kill the current character or your opponent switches again.
Yeah, it feels like, especially since it came out, you know, it's the most recent Arxis game since Dragon Ball Fighters, and it feels like overall just a game where you have so many better defensive options than Dragon Ball offers.
It has fewer defensive options, I'd say, but they're better in general. Like, a lot of the ones in Dragon Ball are very easy to punish and very risky, but they also have, like, weird counters depending on what your defensive option is. But in this one, it's kind of like, okay, you have fewer options and it's very clear how they work, and they're very strong with how they work.
Yeah, I guess there's actually no alpha counter, is there, now that I think about it?
No, I don't think so.
Or maybe there is, and I've just forgotten that part of the tutorial, because the tutorial is kind of long, because they have a lot of mechanics to introduce.
Yeah, I had to go back to the tutorial a few times after playing, just to, like, look up on how to do a thing that I was pretty sure I saw, but I couldn't remember.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of systems to keep in mind. Including Resonance Blaze, which is their X-Factor. It's their comeback mechanic. It's their sparking from Dragon Ball FighterZ.
Yeah. I like it, but it's also much lower key than either sparking or X-Factor. Like, in the sense of, like, for spark, you have a spark, and when you use the spark, you know, it does its thing. Like, the later you use it, the more it does, but it's always, like, powerful. It's kind of like, if you use it at this point of the match, it will do this thing. Same with X-Factor. But with Resonance Blaze, it's not like you will reach the point where Resonance Blaze does the thing. You actually have to, like, level up your Resonance Blaze before it happens, because it has 4 levels, and you increase those levels by doing assist-related actions, so, like, tagging in, doing the, like, I don't know what's called, the assault thing, like the big attack, doing supers together, basically doing actions with your friend, with your comrade, and then you level up, it goes up to 4 levels, and then when your tag partner dies and you have access to Resonance Blaze, its power depends on what level it was. So it's kind
of
like
built the bonds of friendship.
Yeah, it's basically like you have to like rely on friendship. So it's it even has like a trophies that the reference of power of friendship or whatever. But it's very interesting because it's this like it's like a comeback. It's a comeback mechanic. But if you forget to use it properly, if you don't use it properly, you miss your opportunity, and it's not really going to do as much.
Yeah, I guess, like, on paper, it feels like it should be the strongest, one of the strongest comeback mechanics, right? I mean, I guess X-Factor in Marvel 3, like, depended on characters, and for some characters, it was just insane. Like, Akuma got a huge boost to speed and power that just made him ridiculous. And on some characters, it was less strong. Resonance Blaze, like, restores your blue health, constantly generates meter, makes you able to cancel specials into supers, which is really huge. And then also you do a ton more chip on all your stuff. Like, you can chip someone down to basically zero with 2 supers during Resonance Blaze. You can't kill with chip, but, like, it's still really gross. But you can only activate it when you're already down a character. Like, unlike Sparking or X-Factor, you don't have the option of popping it early for less result. You just cannot do it.
Yeah, and also I think it'll boost some supers. Like, it gives them additional hits in the same style as Blaze Blue's Overdrive mechanic did.
That's true. Actually, I think, for some characters also they have some Resonance Blaze unique mechanics, but they're pretty subdued.
Yeah.
So it's I haven't really made much notice of them so far.
Yeah. I guess like the final thing to go over that's worth noting is that they did design this game for a pad, and for simpler inputs, and you know, like wanting people to feel like, even though they don't have the combo or input skills, they can enjoy what a fighting game is about.
And because of that, the inputs are a lot more, like, DP is just two buttons. Dash, like, if you hold forward, you just start dashing. You don't have to do a special input. You can put air dash on a button. It's just, it's a lot more accessible in that way.
I'll be honest, like, instant air dashes were the hardest damn thing for me in any fighting game, and having it to a button is, like, such a lifesaver.
Yeah, I need to get used to using it. It's one of those great tools that I just have trouble making myself use unconsciously, but it seems pretty fucking useful.
It's also, regarding the dash, most characters, yeah, they run if you press a direction. Like, there's no walking and dashing, except characters that have only command dashes, like Hakumen.
That's true.
Which has a few weird interactions, because, for example, throws are simplified. So what throws do are, you press the throw button, and your character, they solve the age-old issue of how long is a throw range in Blaze Blue, which changes with every game, by basically saying, when you press the throw button, you run up to the character and then grab them. But with characters like Hakumen, it gets really weird, because Hakumen doesn't run, he hops. And because his hop is a command, his default movement is walking. So if you whiff a grab with Hakumen, he basically, like, walks slowly forward for a while, and you're just gonna eat whatever, whereas other characters just go super quickly, so even if you miss a throw, you can cancel it and block it on time.
Some might say that that's, like, karmic justice and balance for the fact that Hakumen is really gross in this game.
I will have you find that Hakumen being really gross in this game is karmic justice for him dragging his heels in the low-tier category for, like, eons.
He was good in Chrono Phantasma.
He was good in Chrono Phantasma, yeah. But up until Chrono Phantasma, he had an uphill voyage. Like, he had to climb up, like, Mount Everest. That's how uphill it was.
Yeah, I suppose. Well, it sounds like we're ready to talk about some characters.
Yes.
So, generally speaking, you've got this interesting... There's a few things that are interesting about this game as far as the character roster. One is there are characters that you won't have played before, whether they're just characters from a franchise that you just didn't mess with, or they're totally new characters, like Ruby. And then there are characters that you have played before, and they're divided into basically, I would say, two categories. One is just similar enough to how they used to play that it throws you off. And the other is kind of only glancingly representing what they used to be.
Yeah. Yeah, it's this very weird... it's very weird because... I guess we didn't mention that there are auto combos, aka... or smart combos, as they call them, where you just press a button and you do your character's standard bread-and-butter combo. Kind of like Dragon Ball Fighters. But how that translates is... For example, I've never played Ragna before BlazBlue Tag, and I have a friend who plays a lot of Ragna, I have a lot of matchup experience versus Ragna, but I've never actually, like, played the character. So I pick up Ragna while waiting for Hakumen, and I do extremely well simply because I know how he's meant to be played, and because the inputs are so simple, I can just do them and kind of get the result of, you know, an average Ragna player from BlazBlue.
Right, aren't used to, like, the combos and the inputs, but you know what good Ragna play is supposed to look like.
Exactly, like, if you know the game plan, you can basically play that character properly. Or, like, you know, I have never played Nu or Lambda or whatever. I hated that character with a passion. And we tried that on stream for funsies. I picked Nu and what's her name from Unial?
Batista?
Yeah, Batista. Just like for funsies. And yeah, you can basically do what Nu players do extremely easily, even if you never touched a character. You just need to know what Nu does, and that's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, sword juggles for days. It was, we did it just for giggles, and then I didn't giggle very much.
It was a very mean lockdown. Which is, I guess, what the new play is about.
Mm-hmm. On the other hand, you have characters where you have played a bunch of them, and then, like, they have either they've changed so much, like, and, like, most of the characters that I play haven't been affected by this, but, like, if you're a Platinum player, I have a friend who's a Platinum player, and you play this game, Platinum doesn't play like Platinum. Platinum plays like a tribute character to Platinum, a sort of Platinum-inspired character where she has the animations and she has the moves, sort of, but they work by completely different rules. She has no RNG in this game. And that was, like, her whole game plan before.
I think I mentioned it before in one of the previous episodes where I expect characters to act like remix versions of their characters, because that's what they did with Guilty Gear XX when you could unlock EX versions of characters. Mm-hmm. Platinum is basically that. Like, that's the kind of extent to which some EX versions of Guilty Gear characters changed. Like, they just play completely differently, but they have the same moveset. Kinda.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I've had a very hard time adjusting to Hakumen. Mostly because I keep trying to do Hakumen, like, Blaze Blue standard inputs, but then it's just, oh, wait, I don't have this kind of parry, I don't know where my Zantetsu is, I don't know whether this move is available or whether it's part of a smart combo, so it's taking me a while to still get used to it.
And I, on the other hand, who used to play Hakumen and then haven't since Continuum Shift 2, I played Hakumen versus a friend of mine for in this game, and I got a double perfect. And I was like, oh, wow, this is like, I remember the game plan, but not the buttons, and this is going great.
Yeah, it's pretty much the same situation I had with Ragna, so it's just like, as long as you know what you're supposed to do, but don't know how to do it, you'll be fine with this game.
Mm-hmm. One of the interesting things, I feel like the characters actually that made the most loyal translation to this game are the Uniel characters, which is surprising to say, but I feel like they actually didn't change that much.
You mean they're still, like, because ridiculous? Uniel was...
Well, and they were already kind of like 2.5 button characters, right? Like, in Uniel, your attack buttons are A and B, and then C, but C is also EX, so you don't want to use C too much. So you've kind of got 2.5 buttons for your normal game plan. And that's how this game works, too. So it's actually a pretty smooth translation for them.
Yeah.
They do, however, have those Uniel normals, as they have been called in the community. Where, yeah, like, you press, like, you're playing Linne, who's, like, the smallest character in that game, she's a short little girl in a yellow hoodie, and you just press 5B, and you're taking up 70% of the screen with a sword swing.
Yeah, it literally feels like playing Uniel again, because I played Akatsuki, who basically plays like every other character in this game except an Uniel character, so I'm pretty much at home.
Mm-hmm. Just... Yeah, no, welcome home.
It is, like, I hate it so much. Like, I guess it's fine. Like, it's whatever, because, you know, you can't, like, kill their normals. Or redraw them. That would be ridiculous. But, like, holy crap. Like, getting full screen hit by some stuff while playing Blaze Blue characters will never feel good.
Can I tell you a secret that I haven't told you until now?
Yeah.
About Linne?
Yeah.
That 5B that I use a lot, that huge sword swing?
Yeah.
That's head invincible, too.
Oh, well, okay, that explains a lot.
So never jump. If you're playing Linne, just keep your feet on the ground.
Yeah, which is lovely with a character that actually doesn't run, but whatever. I'll figure it out. Like, I've figured it out. Most of the matches that gave me headaches, I managed to figure out in the end when we were playing. It's just mm-hmm. like... It's like playing a puzzle game. Like, you manage to finally, you know, beat Linne, and you're kind of like, okay, woof, I finally did it. This was actually possible. And then there comes a Gordo, and you're like, oh god, I have to do this shit again.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of which, I actually want to talk a little bit about Hakumen's changes, because I feel like Hawkman got sort of like pushed one this way and that, right? Like you've got the disadvantages you've mentioned, right? Where like everyone else's throws got buffed. Hawkman's did not, basically.
Yeah.
Actually got kind of nerfed. He doesn't have run when everyone else has run. He's just got the little hop. And he also doesn't have the constantly generating meter he has from Blaze Blue.
I mean, that one kind of evens it out because he can do specials without meter now.
That's true.
So it's kind of whatever.
Well, but he can. So if you cancel a special into a special, it costs a bar.
Yes, that is true.
And you can only do it. You can only do it once. You can't cancel a special into a special into a special.
Well, if you play the combo challenge mode, with Hakuman, there is this one ridiculous thing, which I have no clue why they included. There is a specific combo that actually lets him, like, chain together 4 or 5 special moves. Because what you do is, and it's like the same special, so the restriction is you can't do the same special in a combo. The thing is,
right?
You do his kick special, and when the kick special does the final hit, you jump cancel. But the problem is you don't actually jump. You just input jump, and then the jump is queued up to happen after the move. But the game still registers it as a jump cancel, so then you cancel the jump before you jump into his Zantets, and then you cancel the Zantets back into the kick special, and then you rinse and repeat this rotation until you're out of meter.
That's kind of, like, that's bullshit, but that's also kind of fucking rad.
Is... Like, of all the combo challenges and stuff I've tried in this game, that was probably the hardest thing to input, just because of how weird it is. Like, it's essentially frame perfect. So, yeah, he can kind of bypass that. I don't know why they put that in, but whatever.
I mean, it feels like in a lot of ways, Hawkman, like, some of these characters they're rolling out as DLC, and I feel like part of the reason they did so is because they're characters who mess with the rules of the game a little more and are a little stranger.
Yeah, I mean,
so I think Hakuman is more intended for a more experienced player.
I mean, the counter with the way DPs work is kind of weird, because essentially the counter is, like, fully invincible. Like it grabs throws, it doesn't matter where you hit him. Like, it'll go through, because the rules of the base game are, if you press the DP command, you're invulnerable. And because his parry is his DP command, he inherits the global rules of the game, and that makes his parry essentially stronger. So, like, in that way he's buffed.
Yeah. But on the other hand, if you fuck up a parry, you can no longer burst afterwards, because that's a DP.
So
and then also, it can't parry assists.
Yes and no. Because unlike Chrono Phantasma, the parry will always come out. So if you parry an assist while the character that's out is close to you, you will grab them.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. That's at least how that's how I've seen it work, at least.
That's intense.
Because that parry doesn't differentiate between projectiles or not. Like, Vice's parry acts like Hakuman's parry in the latest Blaze Blue, where if you parry a projectile, there's no riposte. But Hakuman's is like his old parry, which is you always riposte.
Yeah, that's weird.
It's weird. It takes a lot of getting used to. I don't think he's like the parts where he's weak. It's not like one of the Blaze Blue updates where they essentially went, okay, his counters are now garbage and his combos are now godlike. It's more along the lines of some of the stuff, like some of the moves are better, some are worse. The parries are better in some ways, but worse in other ways. So he's essentially remixed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I want to talk about a bit about the Ruby characters, because these are the only characters in this game that are truly, genuinely new. And it's, well, first off, the sprite work on them is beautiful. They look fantastic.
Yes.
In fact, to a point where sometimes they're standing next to other characters and they make them look bad. But, you know, that's you know, a game like this where you're reusing assets, a crossover game, that's just going to happen.
Yeah.
But I don't, so you play Weiss and you played a decent amount of Blake. I feel like you've got the most experience with Weiss, and I probably have the least with Weiss of all of them. So why don't you tell me a little bit about how you feel about Weiss?
So Weiss feels, she feels very good, but it feels like a lot of the, game, some, like the actual, like, main game doesn't let her use all her abilities that much. Like, she has, so she's kind of like a very standard issue character. Like, you have projectiles, you have, you know, standard DPs, dash attacks, and stuff like that. The two main gimmicks that kind of make her feel unique are that she's able to set an ice wall in front of her, and then you can have that ice wall either be like something that you use for a wall combo, like you create a wall behind your opponent and then you basically can wall combo them, or you use that to cut off the opponent from you. But it's not fast enough to do it like on reaction, like to like eat up a fast projectile. It's not like that quick. It's just like something you have to plan for. But her other main gimmick is, if you, instead of shooting a projectile, hold the button, you will actually not shoot the projectile, but instead leave a black circle there. And you can then use that black circle, like it stays permanently there on the field until you tag out, or you use that slot to shoot a projectile again. If you use a dash and move, you can cancel the dash and move if you end up next to that circle, to bounce off of that circle and do an extra follow-up, like either cross up the opponent or slide into them or like uppercut them, things like that. And, and like mechanically, that feels like really interesting. I like it. But the problem is, with the way the game is set up, like you want to tag out like fairly quickly, and when she tags out, those rings are gone. But also, because you need to charge the projectile, and you don't shoot a projectile if you want to set up black circle, and that takes a lot of time, and the game is so fast, you don't really have that much time for setup. Like, a good comparison would be Rachel, who can like kind of fire and forget her poles. Like, she can just shoot those poles and they'll land there, and they'll stay there. And then if she tags out, those poles still exist. It almost feels like what should have happened is either those black circles stay where they are when you tag Weiss out, or it functions like Bedman in Guilty Gear Xrd, where once you shoot a projectile, it just leaves a black circle from where it was. So right now, like, there's so much setup time for very little payoffs, and I've tried to make it work a lot. Like, even on low-level play, it's really hard to make it, like, work. Like as in, like, I know what I'm doing with my character, somebody else is faffing about, I still don't have time to actually set up as much.
Mio and I are pretty even in this game. We tend to trade sets back and forth, and it is in my best interests for everything that Mio loves to get nerfed. I would love it if Hakumen got some more nerfs to that counter. Even so, you should buff Weiss's circle shit. It just should be stronger. It's kind of ridiculous that it's not.
It's just like, it feels like it would be very good for a 1v1 game. Like, with that, it's kind of, it would be fine. But it's like even hard to set up, like, you know, as an Oki. Like, if you knock down an opponent and you're kind of like, okay, he's knocked down, I'm going to now set up the circle. It's very difficult. And then when you set it, if, you know, the opponent just moves wherever, like away from the circle, you can't use it, because the only way to follow up and bounce off of that circle is not to do the move. It's like, you literally need to like end up next to the, like close to the circle to actually do the follow up.
You also played some Blake, right?
Yeah, I play her a bit while waiting for our DLC characters. I'm kind of like meh about her, mostly because
I liked her a lot when she first came out.
Yeah, she has a very good first impression, like, because the moves are very, you press a button and there's a lot of spinny stuff, and I guess like my main problem is, like, let's say like with Weiss, like her moves, like they're weird, feel like they're part of a game plan that she can't execute. But with Blake, a lot of the moves feel very like auxiliary. Like, they don't feel even, like, part of her game plan.
Yeah. No, that's actually a great point. Like, I don't know what the clones are supposed to be for.
So the clones are essentially, they only activate when either the opponent hits them or your tag end partner hits them. Mm-hmm. But the problem is, like, because setting them displaces you, like, slightly, I think, like she jumps backwards, and they aren't really that good. Like, the shadow one isn't that good. I've only managed to use the stone one, which, like, is essentially a free block. But it's just, like, what I've seen online and what I've played, it just doesn't seem worth the effort. Like, you're just better off trying to land one of her other hits. Mm-hmm. And again, it's kind of like, oh, if, like, you set the shadow and then, you know, that stayed there, and then eventually you could tag her back in to do something with that, maybe it would have been more interesting. But then she has like, other mm-hmm. auxiliary moves, like the shooting underground, like, with her gun, which is also kind of like, mm-hmm. Whatever. Like, it doesn't feel like it's part of the other thing she does.
Yeah, it seems like she's a mix-up character who just isn't that, like, one. Okay, here's the most frustrating thing. I had her on my main team for a while, and she is a character who a lot of her buttons end up putting her in the air, and then she has no aerial super. So all of her combos are trash. I just don't understand what they were like. I feel like she's a bag of different ideas that don't really cohere into one identity.
Yeah, her not having a narrow super feels really weird. I think, like, what they generally expect you to do is, like, you launch somebody in the air, you follow them up, and then you do the air special, which, like, catapults you downwards like a dive kick.
Hmm.
I think that's the general expectation that I've at least seen in the combo challenges. But again, it's just, she has very shiny combos, but then the rest of the package just doesn't seem to supplement them that well. At least that's my first impression.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, this game came, like, one of the first things that happened after this game came out was the producer did an interview where he basically was like, "Yeah, I'm pretty pissed that Arxis management gave all the money to Dragon Ball FighterZ and we had to make this on a shoestring budget."
Oh, I didn't catch that.
Oh yeah, he was pretty blunt about, like, yeah, sure would be nice if we had money to make this video game, wouldn't it? So, I imagine if it does well enough, which it seems like it's doing all right, it'll get some, they'll support it, and I would love to see some adjustments to characters like Blake, who doesn't feel like she's quite there.
You know, it's one thing that surprised me, like, I don't even mention that, like that quote, Dragon Ball FighterZ feels like it made fighting games more accessible. Mm-hmm. And this game almost feels like a follow-up to Dragon Ball FighterZ, because I think this does a better job overall at making an accessible fighting game.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to talk a little more about that later, but I definitely think, like, if at this point, if you set money aside, if I have someone who doesn't play fighting games who's like, I want to play a fighting game with you, I would probably recommend this game, because it is the quickest road to feeling like you're doing cool shit of any fighting game I've ever played.
Yes. Yes. We'll go over that in more detail, but we need to cover, like, two more Ruby characters.
We do indeed. Did you spend much time with Ruby?
I barely touched her. I can't stand her voice actress. I'm sorry.
You can turn her to Japanese if you want.
But then all the custom intros will be broken, even if I don't use them.
Well, I mean, just learn some Japanese. It's fine.
I did for 3 years.
yeah, I played a decent amount of Ruby. She's not on my main team at this point, but I still like her a lot. She's really strong. And I feel like she is an interesting example of this. She's like this mobile zoner. I almost want to compare her to Peacock from Skullgirls, to an extent, because she's like a zoner with, like, multi-hitting projectiles and really good, like, teleport mobility, and also some good like, jumping normals and stuff.
Yeah, I can see that.
And really, she does this fun, like, hit and run game that I feel like, Peacock is probably, well, okay, you tell me, Miadrog, is Peacock more frustrating to fight than Ruby or less?
Oh god, it's been a while. I mean, I was never, like, really frustrated with Peacock because, like, I'm used to playing against Faust and Guilty Gear and stuff like
Yeah,
that.
okay.
This is more like
That's
just,
fair.
this is more just like a very, strong, like, I almost say, like, a Blaze Blue, like, not main character, but, like, one of the main characters. Like a lot of really good options.
I mean, like, I feel like the strongest thing is her medium, well, I guess it's her B fireball, is like she swings her scythe down to sort of like plant it into the ground to fire it. And so that's a two-shot projectile that combos with itself. It goes like bang, bang, and that'll combo if the first one hits. And also, as she swings it down, it's a hit.
Yes.
So it's like a projectile get off me, which is really fucking good.
It's like I said, Blaze. Like she reminded me of main Blaze Blue character. Actually, it's more like a like main Guilty Gear character because she has like a lot of weird options. So it's kind of like they all synergize. But like you said, like she has zoning, but also she has a lot of like very good like normals. So she's like a keep away, but you know almost guerrilla warfare, like go in, go out. So. Yeah, she frustrates me, but also now I can cut projectiles with Hakumen, so I don't care anymore. But yeah.
Yeah. So I find her pretty fun,
Yeah.
but the character that really, really, like, I had such high expectations when I first saw the first trailer for Yang. And I was basically being like, I'm setting myself up for disappointment, but I'm gonna main Yang, basically no matter how she turns out. And she turned out great. I'm really happy with what Yang is, which is basically a quick, like sort of like an armored speedster.
Yeah,
She's, yeah.
she's essentially what Bullet in Blaze Blue should have been.
Yeah, no, that's a good way of putting it. She does like quick, like rush down style moves. She has a little bit of zoning, but only like. It's that style of zoning that I really like, which is like, if the opponent has no projectiles, you've got one, so you're better than them. If your opponent has a projectile, your projectile is almost certainly worse than theirs.
Yeah.
But yeah, she's got armor on a bunch of moves. She covers ground really quickly. She has great mix-ups.
Sorry,
Her,
you
like,
cut
her,
out there
her,
for a
her,
minute.
I was saying, you know, she's got armor on a lot of her moves. She's really fast. She's got good mix-ups. Her jump C is just like, like Akatsuki, it's just a straight downward like dive punch,
Yeah.
which is really good for ambiguous stuff. She's just really fun to play.
Yeah, if I wasn't stubborn about Vice, I would probably play her because I played Akatsuki, I liked him. I played Bullet and I tried to like her, but she was really bad. And then I played
Yeah.
Naoto, which is like the similar style, and I enjoy him. So she would definitely have been like a pick. I really wish they wouldn't have made her always override the current song going on. Like, I think that is kind of bullshit, but whatever. Because every time she gets low health, she powers up, and then her theme song plays.
The one nice thing, so they picked the song. I'm a Ruby fan, right? Well, fan is strong. I enjoy Ruby. I appreciate Ruby, as a show. And they picked the song I Burn from Ruby. And I'm really glad you can't pick it as a normal battle song. You can only pick it when Yang powers up. It is a little unfortunate that it is basically guaranteed to happen if Yang's in the fight and override the rest of the fight. But because it powers up, it means that you never hear the full song, and that's a good thing. Because have you listened to the full song, Neo?
No, but somebody on stream mentioned a rap segment.
Oh yeah, there's a rap breakdown. It's very bad. I'll have to make you listen to it. And maybe I'll put it in the podcast. There's an idea.
No, don't. We'll get content ID'd. But no. Of all the Ruby songs I've heard, they're either extremely good or extremely bad. Like, there's no middle ground.
But pretty much that's the show.
Okay, good to know.
They don't know how to do middle ground. But yeah, I think her sort of her mobile armored style is really fun, and I'm really pleased with how she turned out. And I also think the power up mechanic is really fun. Yeah, her song privileges can grate a little bit. I appreciate it, but also like I think it is kind of uncool that I keep sabotage that I keep basically stealing the aux cord every time we fight.
Yeah.
But yeah, the way she gets enhanced at low health is really fun.
I personally think that like low health enhancements are generally not a good special ability for a character because it means you have to like play badly to get it. But you know, it's just such a minor thing.
Yeah, well, I mean, and I think it's fine if that's like, I don't know. Honestly, for me, it's perfect because I, like, my general game plan is that I spend the early part of my health bar trying things out and trying to sort of, like, gather data and try different things. And then when I get low on health, I go back to basics and stick with what I know works and experiment less. So I tend to burn through health.
Mm-hmm.
And so it works out for me. Yeah. And as long as it's not a universal mechanic, it's for one character, I think that's a fine concept. Also, it's true to the show. That's just what she does.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Do we want to cover the persona segment a bit, or?
So I guess I'll just say, I'll cover kanji really quickly, which is just that they did a really weird job of translating kanji, where he doesn't have a lot of his tools. Like, he's got a projectile in Persona 4, and he doesn't now. And it kind of fucks him real bad. It's sort of how he was able to get in range to do stuff, is he'd hit you with lightning and you'd be paralyzed, and he can't do that now, so you can just avoid him. And then also he doesn't really have pokes. I don't understand, like, his design just is really confusing, where they just, like, it doesn't feel like they remixed him, it just feels like they just cut chunks out of his game plan.
Yeah.
And it feels really bad.
Yeah. Naoto feels, like, Naoto on paper looks really broken because of the fate counter being a toggle, essentially. Like, instead of, like, mm-hmm. needing to lower your opponent's fate from, I can't remember what it was in Persona... arena to zero, like you need to hit several times, and then when the faint counter is on zero, you do a special and then you instant kill the opponent. Here you just need to hit one super, and then the second time you hit with like the other super, it's an instant kill. And it feels like it's broken on paper, but from what I've seen in practice, it's like it's that's 4 bars of meter, and you need to get hit twice, and you can also tag out and. At that point, you're probably already dead anyway, so it didn't seem like... Mm-hmm. It almost seems like, you know, falling for an instant kill in Guilty Gear, like, you're gonna see it coming.
Yeah, it feels like one of those things that seems really scary in training mode, and then you go into an actual match and you're like, oh, actually, this is fine.
I mean, look, to put it this way, in Guilty Gear, you enter instant kill mode, and then as soon as you do the super, if it hits, it'll instant kill. And you know, when you play Guilty Gear... It's kind of like, oh no, this person is in instant kill mode. Now, as soon as they do the move, I'm dead. But also, it's extremely easy to, like, avoid it, and you can just play keep away and not fall for it. Mm-hmm. So I think it's, like, totally. I think it's fine.
So I guess closing thoughts, I don't know, this, like, I went into this expecting it to be a different game than regular BlazBlue, but I wasn't prepared for just how different it was. And it's to a point where I don't consider this to be, like, it's a BlazBlue game as far as, like, I'm not trying to say, like, you know, like, fucking people say Devil May Cry 2 isn't a Devil May Cry game, right? I'm not trying to make some kind of point here. But it also, it isn't a BlazBlue game. It is, but it isn't. You know what I mean?
I mean, for me, it's very much if you had put any other licenses on this, it could have, like, with these system mechanics, like, it would have been able to get away with being whatever franchise. Like, it very much has a lot of its own unique things, but it's also a Arc System Works game. Like, I've played a lot of Arc System Works games, and if this just had a new coat of paint and I played it, I would be able to tell, oh, hey, you know, this is from BlazBlue, this is from Sengoku Basara, this is from Guilty Gear, this is from Battle Fantasia, you know, because they do that with their games. They take mechanics from different games and put them together.
Totally.
And that's absolutely fine. So, in terms of, like, comparing this to BlazBlue, it's kind of like, I'm okay with playing either. Like, because I have my main character here, I'm fine with playing this for a while. But if, let's say, a new BlazBlue game released, I would probably go to the new BlazBlue game. But right now, I don't really feel a need to go to Central Fiction, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, for me, I guess you sort of hit the nail on the head, right? Which is, for me, none of the characters I like from Blaze Blue are here. Hawkman's here, and I like Hawkman, but I also have this thing where I don't want to play someone else's main, a friend's main, so I don't tend to play Hawkman. Hibiki's not here, Terumi's not here, Susano isn't here. The characters that I really love from Blaze Blue aren't here, and so I probably will still play some Central Fiction here and there, just because I love those designs, and I'm bummed that they're not here. But I also do like this game a lot, and I don't think, like, I don't know that it's like I have to pick between this and Central Fiction. To me, it kind of splits my attention.
Yeah, yeah. What about this compared to Dragon Ball Fighters?
I like this a lot more than Dragon Ball Fighters.
I
like Dragon Ball Fighters a lot conceptually.
Yeah, I like this. I think I like this more as well. Because I think it's easier to get into. And I think, like, this is, like, simple, but with, like, depth. Dragon Ball Fighters is deceptively simple, but it's actually much more complicated than it seems, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's almost like, it's actually, like, Guilty Gear. Like, Guilty Gear looks, like, Guilty Gear looks simpler than it actually is. It looks complicated, but it's actually even more complicated than it looks. And Dragon Ball Fighters is kind of like, it looks simple, but it's actually much more complicated. And then this game, it's like, oh, it looks simple, and it is fairly simple, but there's also a lot of wriggle room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like Dragon Ball, it's easy, like, when you're doing one-on-one stuff, I always appreciate it, but you keep coming back to the fact that it is Marvel vs. Capcom style, it's a setup-style game, right?
Yeah.
The game is built around you setting up situations to your advantage, and this just... It's just not a way I like to play fighting games. I don't like these characters that are just like, or teams or whatever, where it's just like, okay, let me set up this elaborate, like, perfectly timed, like, series of, like, an assist, and then I have this projectile on screen, and then I flip in, and then they can't see, so I can do a high-low mix-up. Like, I hate that.
Yeah, I actually just want to be clear, like, I generally am not super into Marvel, but if somebody told me, oh, I play a lot of Marvel, which one of these I should get, I would probably tell you Dragon Ball, because Dragon Ball is much, much closer to Marvel than this game. This game is like, how do you explain? Like, this game is very light on the tag mechanics, like, they're very crucial, but it's like, they're not complicated to execute, if that makes sense.
They're there to emphasize the action, not take the spotlight.
Yes, yes, that's a good way to put it.
And really, I don't want anyone to flinch away from this comparison. This is a much better game, but if you need a comparison, it's kind of like Street Fighter Cross Tekken, in that way.
Yeah, I can kind of see it. It's, I mean, like, even like you'd almost like compare it to like Tekken Tag at that point.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I just don't play Tekken games much, so.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
It's a hard comparison for me.
You can very much play it as a, I have two independent characters, whereas Dragon Ball Fighters is, I need three characters that work well together. In a lot of cases.
Yeah, for sure.
So
do you feel like, is this gonna be, like, where on your list of priorities is this for fighting games going forward? Like, you know, we'll have more game releases, obviously, but, like, right now, is it, like, if I want to play a fighting game, this is my go-to, or is it, like, a side thing, or what?
Oh, God. So, like, right now I'm in a weird situation where I'm playing a lot of fighting games because, like five different people I know play five different things, but, like, for me, I would like to play this until the end of the year, like, regularly, like, once a week at least, because I really enjoy it. Whereas, like, I have Dragon Ball, like, I own it, and I own the season pass and everything, and I'm kind of, like, not really in the mood to play it. So, like, if somebody came over and saw all my fighting games and asked me what I wanted to play, I would probably play this. Right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'm in the same spot, where, like, especially for people who don't tend to play fighting games, this is the most, like, this is the one it's like, well, we're gonna have the most fun with this one. We'll both have a good time.
Yeah.
Whereas, like,
I've had friends who were like I had a friend message me who was just like, "Hey, I picked up Guilty Gear. Let's play some Guilty Gear." And they don't play fighting games. And I was like, "Oh boy, I'm gonna destroy you. This isn't gonna be fun for you."
Yeah. Like in a lot of these games, it's like you have to pick a character you don't play. But if you pick a character you don't play, it's probably because you don't enjoy that character as much. Or know that character as much, which is what I do in Guilty Gear. I just pick somebody I only surface level know if I'm playing against a new person. In this one, it's like, it doesn't matter. I can pick somebody and I'll be able to do flashy stuff and they'll be able to do flashy stuff and we'll all have a fun time.
Totally. Yeah. And then I guess the last question is how much do you anticipate this taking a backseat once you get your copy of Fighting EX Lair?
Oh boy, well, I have my copy of Fighting EX Lair, but, what I'm probably gonna do is, I'm gonna spend a month with Fighting EX Lair to familiarize myself with it, and then what I'll probably end up doing for the rest of the year, if I like Fighting EX Lair as much as I like BlazBlue Tag, I'm gonna alternate between the two.
That makes sense.
So I want some time to get to know my new friend, and then I'm gonna spend time equally with all friends.
There you go. I do want to hit real quick. I think I mentioned on a previous podcast the possibility of us doing some stuff on Mario Tennis Aces. Yeah, that game's real fucking good, and that's definitely a fighting game. So we're gonna have to do some coverage at some point.
Yeah, a lot of people have asked us to cover specific games, and I think, like, until the end of the year, you can expect us to cover Fighting EX Lair, Mario Tennis. There will probably be a dry spell, and we might sit down and try out that, what was it, the fighting game with the robots? Rising Thunder, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because that's now available to play again. And yeah, Mario Tennis Aces, and maybe we will try Soul Calibur 6 this year. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes.
We'll see how it goes.
I will say, we'll mention at the end of everything, but like my Twitter handle is @6detmar, SIXDETTMAR. And if you have stuff you think we should be covering, you can let me know. I'm not like, you know, you might be like, "Hey, you should really cover Tekken 2," and I'll be like, "No." But we're open to suggestions. I'm sorry. It's not your fault. Listen, it's not your fault. Stop beating yourself up about it.
It's a problem. I have to own every fighting game. Anyway, if you want to find me on Twitter, I'm @MDKII. That's MDK Roman numerals 2. And you can just request anything, or you can request anything in the comment section of the YouTube video, or if you're listening to this on iTunes, I guess, yeah, Twitter is your only option. Or a review. You can ask us in a review.
Yeah. Actually, I haven't checked the reviews in a while. Maybe we'll take a look. But yeah, thanks everybody for listening. And yeah, we'll catch you next month for some Fighting EX Lair talk.
Bye-bye.